Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. For pensions, protection, savings and investments. At Zurich, we deal in peace of mind.
It's John Cook here with you on Drive Time this evening. Now, the Mental Health Commission has published its annual report, which looks at how the service as a whole and individual services have performed in the past year. The Commission says that adopting a rights-based approach to mental health care has improved services in many areas and that the use of restrictive practices is declining. Professor Jim Lucy is Inspector of Mental Health Services in Ireland and he joins me in studio here this evening. Thanks very much for coming in to us, Professor Lucy.
Good evening, John.
When we talk about this human rights-based approach to healthcare with regards to mental health, well, you and I were just agreeing. We should explain what that means.
Yes. I mean, a human rights-based approach to healthcare is one which is person-centred, which gives people a meaningful opportunity to engage in their care plan and in the context of mental health in terms of tribunals and review of instances. It makes sure that their will and their preferences is heard. And of course, one that complies with international agreements which the nation has signed up to in terms of human rights. So those four things really combine to, in our case, to support legislation, and that legislation in relation to mental health requires annual unannounced inspections mm-hmm. of 65 approved centres. And where I go, and along with my team, sometimes up to five or six people with multidisciplinary expertise, going into the centres unannounced mm-hmm. and going through all the regs, rules and codes of practice in each centre can sometimes take us a week in a centre. We stay there late in the evening to do that through the whole week. And we form these very objective reports, which are welcomed by the centres in many respects. To form them, we actually interview the staff, we interview the patients, we interview the residents, we listen to the combined effort, and we assess the culture and the leadership in terms of accordance with these rules and regs and form these annual reports. And that's what we're coming out with here today. The news is good about it. We want to give that good news story.
I was going to ask, do you speak to the patients, to those using the services?
Oh, yes, as a part of it. It's a rigorous part of it.
And their families, I wonder.
We have a number of portals, so people contact us with correspondence, with unsolicited concerns, and we respond to those on a weekly basis.
Now, you've been the Inspector of Irish Mental Health Services for 2 years now. So how many of these inspections are being carried out? Or have you been back to places more than once? I'm wondering, have you noticed changes?
Yes, I have. So every centre is inspected at least annually. I've been to several multiple times in 1 year where there are risk assessments that warrant that kind of involvement. And of course, there is a darker side where centres are not getting with the picture. We have to understand that the results we found today are that the number of centres that are complying has increased. The number of centres that we have to make enforcements has fallen. You know, last year it would have been 29. This year we have had to have enforcements of rules, regulations and codes in 20 centres. So that's a big step forward. Now, those enforcements can go all the way to prosecution, and your mm-hmm. listeners may know.
And why are they not complying? These are, you're talking about centres, we're talking about mental health facilities,
yes.
hospitals,
yes,
facilities
yes.
That do come under governing bodies that have no
right.
reason to act differently to each other.
Well, the truth of it is it's probably to do with culture, it's also to do with resources, it's to do with leadership, but ultimately it's to do with accountability and responsibility and where that lies. And that lies with the HSE, which is the manager of these things. We're independent observers, statutory observers, and we do these reports in order to protect the public and to promote and enhance mental well-being in the country. But the providers, the HSE, they're also not-for-profit providers and for-profit providers, so there's a range, and we apply the same standards right across the country, regardless of where the management is. So the responsibility is with management and leadership.
We mentioned the use of restrictive practices. What do you see, and it's still happening?
Yes, no, restrictive practices have been a part of mental health care. That's to say that there are occasions where a person may well be restrained, may well be isolated, so-called secluded. That restraint could be physical or even mechanical. Now, these are very problematic, obviously, and they can be traumatic. And so a decline in their use is really worthwhile, is really important. Let me just give you an example. By introducing a human rights standard over the last 5 years, we've seen the reduction in restrictive practices in the children's inpatient units, imagine in children, of 90%. Now, that shows you that if you place a standard and you make sure, now, what are the human rights standards? Well, for example, Every one of these incidents requires a post-incident review. You have to talk to the person afterwards, see where it went wrong, where it could change. You then have to come back, review as a team how you got to the situation. And then as a centre organisation, they have to produce annual reports as to how they're mitigating, reducing these events. So it's a hugely transformative view mm-hmm. of this kind of behaviour. And if you can reduce a behaviour such as that in units by 90% over 5 years, you're really doing something positive.
Are you still seeing people inappropriately placed in institutions, children in adult centres or adults in places where maybe it's not fulfilling their needs as well?
The news is very good this year that the admission of children to adult units has fallen. The admission of excessive numbers, so-called overcapacity, has also fallen. So that's very, very good. Our difficulty is with the small number, let's say, of resistant centres, which we've had to call out. And we've had to use the powers we have within the Act.
And can you give me an example of that? How are people resisting you?
Well, the clear result is that breaches are either staying high or even rising. There are centres, we've named several of them. There are about seven.
Are you given excuses for that?
We're given explanations. We're given...
It's challenging work and people probably talk to you about staffing, resources, things
like
that.
They do. The truth is that many say, look, we want to be on the right side of this argument. We don't want to be where we're at. And the centres that are getting with this are making best of the resources in a very constructive way. But the centres that are not, we really have had to either use prosecution if necessary or enforcement, limitation of services, limitation of beds, or now we've decided that we're going to where the responsibility lies and call out the regional and national management to address those centres.
Well, let's hope we see further improvements too. You mentioned to me as you come in that if we could get mental health services right, it's going to help us right across society, obviously, and across all of our health services.
There is no health care without mental health care, and better mental health care makes all health care work. If we invest in this area, which affects every family in the land, in every ER room, in every emergency department, in every general practice, in every primary care facility, if we could address mental health in this constructive human rights-based fashion, we would resolve enormous amounts of the distress we have around healthcare in this country.
Do we call it out enough, I suppose, where we see something inappropriate and admit, as you said, mental health issues, will they affect every family in the land, as you
said? This
is
the most important health issue. Do we talk enough about it? Obviously, I want us to talk about it. I think we do need to talk about it. Certainly in my life, I'm experiencing over the last 40 years, the recognition that every family cares about this. This matters. It's the commonest cause of death under 50 in this mm-hmm. country. We need to invest still greater, and we're still behind the 10% of our health investment that mental health needs. We've been calling for that for year and year. But I think what we're getting to now is a critical point. We're at a tipping point where the bulk of those providers now realise, if I can get with the mental health picture, governed and by various different providers, but actually led by the human rights approach, I can make a difference. And actually all the staff that are experiencing mm-hmm. that difference and the patients benefit in that way.
Professor Jim Lucy, thank you for joining me on Drive Time.